Hey, welcome to another Revenue Hub podcast. Today we are joined by Dan Skodal, VP Data Science and Analytics at Sendyne. Hi, Dan, how are you?
I'm well, Trevor. How are you?
Yeah, excellent. All things considered, pretty good.
Good.
Now, I'm sure many people probably know of Sendyne, but those who may have happened to have missed out on you both, might be useful if you could just give us a brief intro about Sendyne and your role before we jump into the discussion. So if I can sort of just hand it over to you for a moment.
Sure. Thank you for this opportunity. I've been with Sendyne since the Rainmaker acquisition last summer. Oversee our data science team. We work on product innovations. We work on customer support. We help sales and marketing with content creation and thought leadership topics, among many other things. I had been with Rainmaker, revenue management software provider, for 6 years prior to the acquisition, and all told have over 15 years of experience in the revenue management realm for both hotels and actually also multifamily real estate.
Brilliant. Super. So pretty experienced then, we could say.
Sure. I don't think so.
Thanks a lot. What we're going to look at or discuss in this podcast, the three broad areas. First is a general look at the recovery shape, early indicators, regional differences. Then we're going to touch on some different factors, kind of the if factors maybe to consider when we're starting to look at scenario strategy planning. And then finally, and this ties in with a recent white paper that you guys put together, the Ultimate Crisis Survival Guide, we're just going to pick one element out of there, which is forecasting, which obviously everyone is going to have to be doing or should be doing. And so we're just going to drill down a little bit again and touch on that area. You know, when we were talking about putting this together to start with, one of the things that we spoke about were the different shapes of recovery that are being discussed. What are some of the early indicators? So it'd just be really useful from your side, because of the breadth of experience that you have. You would have seen a number of crises in different areas. You're working with large hotel groups. Just what the general vibe is that's going on and being discussed at the moment about how the recovery shape might be. What are some of the things we should be considering?
Sure. I can certainly speak to that. There's in general, there's still a high degree of uncertainty out there, which makes total sense. I mean, this is unprecedented, and even though we've seen other time periods where the industry has been hit hard by different events and externalities, that this is unique, and there's really nothing like it, no basis for really knowing with a high degree of certainty what the recovery is going to look like. So, you know, there's different scenarios that have been considered, and each of those scenarios, I think, you know, you can assign a different probability to, and there's different, you know, shapes of that recovery curve, as you mentioned, that we've talked about. There's the V, which is the strongest bounce back, which at this point, I think it's probably the least likely scenario. Where we are today, right? Oh yeah, best case scenario, but probably least likely scenario, right? You know, that leaves you with more protracted recoveries of various durations, and you know, you've got the U shape and the L shape probably being the most protracted, the most drawn out in terms of the recovery,
and the least preferable.
It might be a toss up. I mean, there's the L shape, and then the W, which has come up. You know, what happens if things recover and then something else happens? Yeah. Planning for each of those different scenarios, I think, is what hotels out there are doing right now, and understanding what the early signs are, the early, you know, leading indicators might be for what that, you know, what that recovery might look like, and just focusing on, you know, putting the right operational plans in place, you know, paying attention to, you know, what kinds of business segments are coming back and when.
Yeah.
I've heard some hoteliers say, you know, what it is going to take to get to 20% occupancy, that's a different person, a different guest than, you know, the guest that's going to get you from 20 to 40% occupancy, which is going to be different from the guests, the kind of guests that get you from, you know, 40 to 60% and so forth. Yeah. So just sort of layering in that demand as it comes back.
You spoke there about looking at the early indicators, and there's quite a lot of data that is been coming out, travel intent and search and flight search. What kind of indicators are you looking at? What sources?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you mentioned some of the big ones, air travel, search data. I mean, the most telling one is going to be, you know, bookings at a hotel level, getting to that level of granularity. You know, it's sort of interesting to see now, as hotels are planning to reopen, who is selling and for what dates, you know, in the future. But, you know, is demand coming back yet? You know, are people booking? I get the sense that many guests are holding off, you know, even though restrictions and policies around cancellations have been relaxed and there's a lot more flexibility, but you don't really see people booking neither the air nor the hotel. It's a sort of a wait, a general wait and see approach as cities start to reopen. And I get a good feeling that the industry knows what they should be looking at. And then it's just a matter of seeing some of those statistics start to reflect a slightly better picture.
I get one of the other things to kind of throw in there as well that I'd be interested in your views is, what part do you think the regional differences will play and are playing on influencing, you know, the data and the signals and how we develop strategies around that?
Yeah, I think based on region, you know, hotels would see a difference in their drive to market versus their, you know, fly to. Some markets that would see local travelers as potential early opportunity, people that might feel like they have been pent up as many of us have for a while.
Heard that referred to as revenge traveling.
Revenge, that's a good way of putting it. I've actually not heard that term yet, but I'm gonna start using it.
One of our other expert partners, Oki, they just mentioned sort of revenge traveling, where we're so annoyed about being pent up and locked in that we.
Right. At the right time, I might put myself in that category. But some other things to consider. I mean, convention destinations and gateway cities might depend more on air travel, and then conventions. I know, you know, a lot of businesses are going to be holding off on meetings, and a lot of these are still getting canceled or still up in the air. That likely will, you know, be some time, I think, to get back on its feet fully.
That makes sense. And I get, you know, and I was reading earlier that South Korea have had, first time they've been able to say no new local cases. They didn't go into lockdown. New Zealand seem to have cracked it. Sweden have taken a different approach. The US, I know it's almost a state-by-state approach as well, isn't it? So there's many variables in and around it. I mean, if you're talking the US market, then because of the size, you're right. You know, it's kind of local business, then I guess interstate travel, before you're then looking at international travel.
And I was going to mention international. I think that would likely, you know, recover later than some of these other you know, types of business.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then I guess looking at the different types of business kind of links us into the second kind of topic we were going to touch on, which is looking at the ifs to consider. So you've got these different shape scenarios that you could try and plan for, but then there will be underlying factors that will build into that scenario planning. And I know when we spoke the other week in terms of talking through this topic, I mean, you mentioned things like business mix, booking behavior, constraint factors, influencing capacity and demand. Can you just kind of give us a little bit of an insight into what are the current things being considered at the moment that will have an impact?
We talked a bit about business mix and sort of how that layers in and monitoring that closely and seeing if there's a, you know, segment where I do see something unexpected, I do see something coming back that might not, you know, reflect the mix of business that I had in the past, you know, how do I leverage that? You know, that's one scenario, or potentially several scenarios of business mix that can be planned around, you know, what about the business I expected to come back that's not, and what's the strategy I need to take to, you know, communicate to them. There's going to be some, you know, some lost opportunities here, I think, unfortunately. You know, with time, I think all that obviously, you know, gets back to some sense of normalcy.
Yep.
Booking behavior, you know, some things to consider, you know, if I'm reopening on short notice, and there is pent up demand in my market, that's going to, you know, shorten my booking horizon that I might be otherwise expecting or used to. On the flip side of that, how do some of the changes in policies, cancellation policies and restrictions that I might be putting in place, and what does that mean for advanced bookings? You know, does that potentially create a longer booking horizon that I am not accustomed to seeing, because maybe my guests are more comfortable making a booking that they know is fully refundable if they choose not to make it.
Yep.
I don't see a lot of that, you know, let me take a shot at, you know, booking this now. Maybe I get a good rate for some months in the future, you know, even if it is no commitment. At least in the data that I've been looking at, don't see much of that happening yet.
Well, I think there was the general messaging that seemed to go out a number of weeks ago to hotels was don't drop your rate. There's also been articles that I've been reading over the last few days, which is talking about potentially travel being more expensive. Certainly airlines are coming out, if we have to have this social distancing, that they're then carrying less passengers, but yep, they're still flying the plane.
Yep.
And also hotels, if they're opening up, how are they opening up to manage if there are social distancing restrictions, you know, whether it's floors, rooms. I guess firstly, two questions. What insights are you seeing in terms of how hotels think they may open up? And are you seeing any correlation between, well, if we're opening up and we've got low capacity, as long as there's low demand, we don't need to change our pricing. But if there is greater demand for the capacity we can release, will we actually see it becoming more expensive?
It's a very interesting question. And certainly, I mean, the only thing I know with some degree of certainty so far is that, yes, it sounds like there's going to be a lot of these kinds of restrictions and regulations. I don't yet know all of the details around social distancing requirements and the degree to which airlines and hotels can bring capacity back online and still adhere to whatever guidelines might mm-hmm. be in place. I think, going back to the question about demand and capacity, it is a very different, it's a very interesting one. Thinking about, okay, you know, airlines have a flight that goes off with 2/3 of the seats blocked due to, you know, that's arbitrary.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
2/3, you know, kind of picking that out of nowhere, but
yeah.
whatever it might be, but you know, some percentage of their seats blocked because of those requirements. Yeah, if demand gets to a level where an airline actually has to start to turn away customers because there's more demand than there are seats, that implies that there is some yielding power, some pricing power that airline can take advantage of. And I think that at least in theory translates to hotels as well. I think it's interesting because you are going to have to walk that fine line between perception of fairness on the part of your customers. They might not perceive why you are charging more in this particular time when their perception might be, oh, you're probably desperate to have me come back, right? Fairness has always been such an important tenet of yield management, of revenue management, is that perceived fairness on the part of your guests and making sure that they see your practices as being fair. That is a big turnoff and something that might, you know, alienate your customers over a longer run. But still, yes, I mean, there's still the fiduciary responsibility of the hotels and the airlines and to actually be in a position where they can hold their rate more easily or, you know, yield their rate potentially at least works in their favor during this recovery period amidst, you know, essentially reduced capacity.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting. I mean, it'll be interesting to watch how all of that plays out from a yield management perspective.
Yeah, I think there is, you know, when you spin that out, there are so many factors around it. There are so many nuances to it. As you say, there's the fairness element, and then going back to the shape of the recovery you spoke about before. I mean, people have spoken about the W for the reinfection, but then nobody actually understands what the economic impact has been when we come out of it. So there could be a little bit of demand. And then if pricing, hotels, flights, or just people's perception of safety of travel, or the desire to hold on to cash because they can't be 100% sure, you could then find that there isn't quite the demand there. You know, it kind of peaks and then tails off or starts dropping off again, because what was expected as they open further, you hit that tipping point of where you're maximizing the demand, but then that demand doesn't increase along a curve that you expected it to. And so that balancing of fairness, the psychological people to desire to travel, and then their economic situation of having the funding to travel, all of those are multi-layered into that decision, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. And you know, the I mean, it's almost cliche by now, but you've always heard the revenue management defined as selling the right unit of inventory to the right person at the right time at the right price. I still think that is going to continue to hold very true. And I think both hotels and airlines need to keep in mind that you don't have to be full in order to maximize your revenue result, given your demand, right? And going back to the earlier conversation about business mix and segmentation, some of the traditional ways we think about segmenting business, say break it down into the most basic components for hotels, which might be, business travelers, leisure travelers, and then group business, right? I think hotels are going to be well served by breaking those down and carefully thinking about how those break down into further pieces, and again, kind of what is that right rate for that right segment, thinking about who might come back first, right? We talked about, at least theorized a little bit about, two different groups that might come back first. We said there's the revenge travelers, right? the ones that are, feeling pent up, and they might be sort of a subset of the, the least cautious leisure travelers, and but also sort of that notion of the getaway, and maybe that's local business also, and not, not fly to someone that could just get in their car and drive. They have a short booking window, all those different ways that you define that segment, and thinking carefully about how you tailor your message and your product offering and your price to that segment. And then the second group, at least theorizing about here, sort of the essential travel, that might be, it might cross over across, traditionally business and leisure, but, maybe there is a family member that you need to get to see. There is that business trip, for companies that have relaxed their restrictions out of necessity, that business trip that needs to be taken. I think some of that messaging is the same, safety, security, et cetera. Some of that messaging is a little bit different as far as what kind of, how you tailor your product and price to that customer. And then all the examples that kind of then flow from those ideas, how do you break down the next, phase of people to come back and into different sub-segments. And it's going to just very much that the complexion of all that segmentation amongst the travel industry, that whole complexion will likely change for some time in the foreseeable future.
I mean, just listening to you there, and I think it's often been spoken about, but becoming more granular around the deeper dive into your groups. I mean, hotels are often so busy, they don't have the time to do that. So having a kind of a decent CRM system for your purpose of communicating is going to be even more imperative now.
Absolutely.
And I think also, just finally on the point around the capacity demand piece, I guess it's not forgetting, if there's constraints around the rooms, then I guess you also have a part to play where there could be constraints around restaurants, bars, spa, pool, if it's a leisure facility. So coming back to your point about that fairness on pricing, everything is going to be restricted. So it would be very easy to look towards the rooms and the pricing of the rooms to try and cover for maybe lost revenue in other areas because there's restrictions there. And it's going to be a very fine balance of how that can be done.
Yeah. And two thoughts I think I just had stemming from what you were just describing. One being the general concept of capacity management. Let's take a casino hotel, for example, that might have some separate social distancing requirements, restrictions, et cetera, in the hotel. And then there's some social distancing requirements as it applies to the casino. We don't know what those are. I haven't had exposure, and maybe some operators have had more exposure to specifically what those are going to look like. But hypothetically, if there's a disconnect there and you are actually more restricted on the casino floor than you are on your hotel rooms, that can result in potential issues where maybe you've got a hotel that's halfway full of overnight guests, but there's twice as many people now that want to be on the casino floor that can actually go to the casino floor at a given time. And you've got a capacity issue there, and those customers will either not be happy or they'll go to one of your competitors or something else, right? That's an interesting problem that really doesn't have much to do with price so much as it does, like I said, capacity management.
Yeah.
And syncing up, if you add in those other outlets you mentioned, restaurants, spas, all those really have to be in sync, you know, even if it means you're maybe even imposing tighter regulations in one area than you actually need to, just for the sake of maximizing good customer service, ultimately, and the experience of that customer coming to your property. The other thing, the other thought that brought to mind was, you know, where are you getting the revenue? You know, if you're limited across the board and all those outlets, again, same example, casino, spa, food and beverage, you know, I think it's more important to ensure that, you know, for someone staying overnight in your hotel, that they are going to bring you additional revenue and profit in the form of those other revenue streams. And they're not just, you know, bunking with you overnight just to do something else outside your property. And you know, all you're getting is the room's revenue. I mean, if you're truly constrained across the board there due to those restrictions, then yeah, you want to make sure that that person is eating in your restaurants and playing on your casino floor or going to your spa or you know, going to the bars or whatnot. So that's another aspect, I think, where CRM is important and comes into play, and understanding, you know, the value, the total value and profit that is associated with each of your guests.
No, that's a good point. And I think in terms of, we spoke about CRM a little bit, Peace, and we've spoken here about looking at the various different factors to consider. So it almost moves us on when we're talking about technology and looking at the whole forecasting, because, you know, even just having this conversation for 20, 25 minutes or so, and the number of different layers and the number of different factors, the different scenarios, the thought of sitting down and trying to derive a forecast would just seem like a nightmare to me. Is it really as tough at the moment than it probably has ever been?
It's definitely tough. I think we'd be the first to acknowledge that forecasting will be a challenge, but I would still stand by that having a forecast is still better than not having any forecast. You can't just throw your arms up and give up on forecasting simply because you think that it can't get accurate enough.
Yeah, that's a good point. The desire to want to have it perfect rather than just have it.
Right. And maybe, you know, maybe there's more importance in having multiple forecasts and different best case, worst case, and 50-50 type of scenarios where, you know, there's going to be upside and downside to each of them, and trying to get some range rather than a completely specific, we call it deterministic forecast. So yes, I mean, allowing for, you know, some margin of error, multiple forecasts, you know, it's still, again, better than giving up on your forecasting completely. And I think also important to understand how it's being used. There's forecasting that is going to drive strategy and decision-making. There's forecasting for the sake of financial reporting and just managing expectations among, you know, different stakeholders inside and outside your organization. And those might not be one and the same. Tactical revenue revenue management forecast is you know, that's going to look at your demand by at a granular level by segment, you know, that might have a different look and feel to it than the forecast being used to, you know, try to get to different outcomes on the financial side. So
that makes sense. That
has to, I think a lot of operators historically have often seen that, and a lot of revenue management people have historically seen those as being one and the same, but I don't think they necessarily need to be. Mm-hmm. And in fact, there are some key differences in those different kinds of forecasts that have to be considered.
Yeah, absolutely. Just touching a little bit about on the forecasting your cancellations and forecast on the short term aspect, can you just sort of touch on that and what you guys were implying the importance of those are?
Sure. Yeah, I think there's really two dimensions to the cancellations piece. And I think at the time that we put out the guide, we were on our way into this crisis and seeing a lot of fall off in bookings, you know, going into the period in which many or most hotels ultimately had to close down anyway. But certainly the challenge associated with trying to get a good handle on what the forecast, what the cancellations were going to look like going into the crisis, really having to rely mostly on very, very recent trends for cancellations and you know, cancellation curves that looked completely different from anything that anyone had ever seen, you know, in years at least. So, you know, calls for you know, using just the latest data available to you on those trends. But the other aspect, I think, now that we're, you know, looking ahead to the recovery is, you know, some of these, just thinking about some of these policy changes and the effect that it might have on cancellations moving forward, you know, all the flexibility now that is out there and how it also might shift and change. Right now, there's probably still a lot of hesitation, a lot of trepidation, and a lot that's still up in the air that might cause, you know, further cancellations that are probably, you know, larger in number than are typical. But as we move forward, how does that change? How does that get gradually back to normal? And just tracking how that shifts over time. And that's, you know, speaking of revenue management software, revenue management technology, that's a very fine piece of the big picture that, you know, that your software, your tool will help you track and help you monitor how it's changing and then just, you know, start to add in more and more history as you feel more comfortable basing your future forecasts on the historical data.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess the short-term forecasting bit, again, when this was written, we were coming into it, and now we're, as you say, looking outwards, hopefully. The tighter you narrow down the time frame, the information available to you in that window that you're looking at becomes slightly more certain looking out at what might be going on in 2 months than maybe what might be going on in 6 months or 12 months or 18 months.
Absolutely. You know, the hotel business has the luxury from a forecasting perspective of advanced reservations. So if you're forecasting an outcome, you know, one very important data point that you have to rely on is that pace of bookings once you're within that booking window. Typically, we would compare that pace to what that booking curve on average normally looks like, maybe for that time of the year and that segment and that day of the week. We have less to go on now, certainly. Booking curves will likely look different. It's something that every revenue manager and dorm should be looking at with a very high degree of scrutiny, is how is the shape of my booking curve shifting? Much like what we talked about with cancellations, do you need to only look at the most recent data available to you to now form a new booking curve? But yeah, I think we'll need at least a few weeks after hotels reopen to make some of those assessments and understand, you know, how that is shifting and, you know, what is the influence of reduced capacity potentially. Does it constrain that curve when you're looking at it, you know, just in terms of normal bookings, but you know, most revenue management systems or many revenue management systems will help you unconstrain that curve to say, okay, if I didn't have all these restrictions in place and I was able to operate at full capacity, this is what my booking pattern might look like, what my booking pace might look like. So yeah, another good application of revenue management technology and revenue management software that will help you understand, you know, what that true pattern might look like as you continue to ramp your capacity back up.
Yeah, it makes sense. The final piece I just like to touch on for a couple of minutes before I need to let you go is around the revenue management software, the revenue management technology. That has advanced so much over the last few years to a point at where there are now systems out there that are working out all these calculations for you. And yet, interestingly, in everything that we've spoken about here, there's a sense of having a human element is critical. Yeah. Because we're working with data and information that is unprecedented. Without wanting to delineate between the highly algorithmic sorts and those that aren't, just more the human value into sure, the decision making, I think would just be interesting to get your take on it.
I think this whole situation is case in point of the importance of striking the right balance between leveraging the technology and everything that if it offers, all of the processing of the data, all of the very granular, the high degree of granularity in its ability to forecast at a segment and day and room type level, all the advantages of the technology and everything that it automates, balancing that with that human element and all of the market knowledge and the you know, everything that the system is not necessarily aware of, and even if it is aware, I mean, there's so many changes happening right on, as we speak, and just such a dynamic, you know, time right now in the industry, and as you know, the industry recovers, that the interaction between the technology and the people is more than ever of utmost importance, and really always has been, and I think operators need to understand, and I think use this situation as sort of the proving point that balance always has and hopefully always will be important. Just speaking very briefly to some of the newer solutions that leverage potentially more data points, that, you know, potentially automate more of the decision making, or best way to put it maybe is automating some of that human input. You know, it's still going to be the same where those are still going to rely on the appropriateness and the accuracy of the historical data to model some output. I mean, right now we've seen, from our perspective, just the ability to kind of make a lot of the tweaks and adjustments on the fly. With the input of our customers is of the utmost importance right now and will be for the next, you know, several months, likely as customers come back online and get gathering input from them and being able to make a lot of the adjustments in how our product is configured for them. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the extent to which, you know, those kinds of on-the-fly adjustments are possible in some of these other models, but it's just very important to be able to do that right now.
Well, that's kind of touched on everything we wanted to cover. I'm very conscious I've kept you for longer than I had planned.
Oh, that's okay.
But it's great to talk with you. There's a couple of times we've spoken now. I always find it highly insightful. Great to speak with someone with the level of expertise that you have.
Thank you.
So really, really appreciate your time and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks again for the opportunity.
Take care.